I was interrupted a little bit there. I'll have to start afresh. This is part of podcasting and getting along. So we have two sort of modes that we've talked about. One is a symmetric mode where the energy is stored and it's a steady state, where the pendulum are moving together. Another one, that is, they're both start at 5 degrees and go in phase. There's another phenomenon in which they go in anti-phase to each other, and this one actually beats the energy transfers from one mode into the other. And it's interesting to see that the actual physical energy travels, the kinetic energy and potential energy, is transferred from one to the other. Now, there's lots of things that would be really nice if I could say, look, the rate at which is something which I can calculate very easy. But the rate of this is, if you think about it, dependent on the actual strength of coupling between the two. So if the first one is barely coupled, not at all, just the slightest coupling, if the first is barely coupled to the second, it will take a long time, say 100 or 200 oscillations for the oscillations to go across. If it's strongly coupled, you'll see it more or less instantly. So there are various things you could do to test this. You would increase the string or change the nature of the string up the top. You could, if you want to have really strong coupling, have a second string coming across to actually, so you can actually see the actual string rather than a torque effect, that is where you're twisting the string. It's more a twisting, it's more a pulling across, and you can see it really quickly as you change the strength of the coupling. So the actual oscillation or beating between the two pendula is dependent on the actual strength of the coupling. So that's an interesting thing. It's becoming increasingly complicated. Furthermore, the actual oscillation is slightly different. The asymmetric oscillation is slightly faster than the symmetric oscillation. If you just think about the symmetric oscillation, your point of rotation is from the height of the hooks. Now, with the weights, they're actually going to drop a little bit, and the oscillation will be from the height of the hooks less the actual slight angle down to where the weight is supported. And so there's that phenomenon. You have another phenomenon of what if the weights are slightly different lengths, and this again will mean that they'll be oscillating at slightly different speeds. Say if you have three weights, weight will select to couple its energy, its oscillation energy, between two weights of the most similar energy. It's a little bit more complex to it, but say if you had a third weight there, say rather than a meter, 75 centimeters, you would see some energy go into the 75 meters, not a very way. And of course, if you have three weights, you'll start to get something looking a little bit chaotic, and I'll have to think about the Hamiltonian. If the Hamiltonian for this is not diagonalizable, it'll be chaotic, and we can eventually get into chaotic pendulum. There's other features in that the pendulum's sensitivity to being accelerated, or its resonant frequency, is dependent on the amount of damping. So the response of a pendulum to a rocking motion, and it's picking up a certain rate of rocking, will be very high. It will have a high Q, as it's called, if it's actually got very little damping. So the general idea is that I can be very precise in my oscillation speed if there's no damping, if you've got a very good swing. But if you have a spring with a lot of damping, I can increase the range at which I can excite things. So this is critical, say, in car suspension, that you want to have properly damped. So your car, its stopping distance is really dependent on the actual your shock absorbers, because the actual you'll get a range of vibrations in braking. But if you don't have a shock absorber, that resonant frequency will start to bounce your tires. So if you've got poor shock absorbers, instead of coming to rest smoothly, you'll start to hit a resonance and bounce along. You won't be able to stop as quickly. There's all these features to do with coupled pendulum. It's something which is really around, so it's a beautiful thing to look at, and it's a beautiful avenue into slightly more sophisticated maths and science to come along the place. And it's got to do with circuits, molecules, a beautiful thing, but where you've actually struck something, and you can transfer energy up one end of the molecule, and it can oscillate and come down. Or I can have one end of the molecule, it can be excited by some light, and it'll be have a nice resonant frequency, i.e. have a narrow range of absorption, and absorb the light, absorb the energy, and slowly bleed the energy up to another chemical reaction further down a molecule. There's so much beautiful stuff to do with coupling, and so much things, so much depth to look at in terms of the actual coupling strength, the damping, and other features which determine the sensitivity of things. So example of a coupled oscillator is a transmission antenna, and your receiving mobile phone is a series of two oscillators which are connected by a coupling medium. In this case, the coupling medium is the string, and the string is a one-dimensional coupler. So the energy is a one-to-one. It's a very fantastic phenomenon to see. Look, if I can only recommend, if you have time, having done the basics of it. So again, the world's a very complicated place, and if you show a student this straight away, it's probably worthwhile to do it. My overall strategy, if I have the time, is if you can at all possible, build up the actual life expectation, where they can actually see a string and a pendulum and an oscillation, get the various names, so that when they actually encounter this, they have a fairly well established long-term memory. Their working memory is not as difficult to saturate. You're not telling time, length, and string, and they can have frequency. And the idea of driving, you've got a whole series of things in the breach of their imagination, and to ask, they're in a position to make a prediction. If they're not in a position to make a prediction, there's no magic in it. And this is the entire thing of keeping science events happening just this little step ahead of where they're able to immediately predict. And the resolution of what's going on can open up belief and understanding, particularly if they can contribute or develop other understanding. Thanks for listening. In the meantime, keep on thinking, doing, and teaching science.